Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, cops beat down an unarmed man in Philadelphia and choke another man to death in Mississippi with a flashlight. Meanwhile, still no justice for Tamir Rice. Is there any end to the rampage of police brutality? We also preview President Barack Obama's speech to the NAACP convention tomorrow in Philadelphia, which will focus on criminal justice reform. Serena Williams wins her 21st Grand Slam title by winning Wimbledon. But what's the deal? Why isn't she being paid like the other women who she's beaten repeatedly? And also, why does America continue to trash her for her looks? We'll be joined by former tennis pro Zena Garrison, Howard Bryant of the ESPN, and also David Frum of The Atlantic, who insinuated that she was using steroids. Plus, Najee talks about his new album, You and Me Forever. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now and TV One. For months, we have covered on this show the number of African Americans who have been beaten and killed by police. It is a long line. We can talk about Eric Garner. We can talk about Mike Brown, Victor White III. We can talk about John Crawford, Rekia Boyd, Ayanna Jones. The list goes on and on. Now there's a new video. Last week, out of Philadelphia, cops beating 22-year-old Tyree Carroll while riding his bike the wrong way down a one-way street. You see the video there. You have what looks like at least four police officers. He is on the ground, motionless, and they are repeatedly punching him, beating him. And police said Carroll had 5.3 grams of crack cocaine on him. He now faces assault and drug-related charges. But they still can't explain why the vicious beating. Also, in Cleveland, still no justice for 12-year-old Tamir Rice, shot and killed by police there in November. A judge dismisses a call for the arrest of the police officer involved. In that particular case, what happened was citizens there were able to utilize a state law that allowed them to present evidence and that a judge there could issue arrest warrant for the officers involved in the death of Tamir Rice, but that judge has declined to do so. And on Wednesday, Jonathan Sanders, a father of two, choked to death by a Mississippi cop after being pulled off of a horse. He was choked with a flashlight. Joining the panel, Dr. Cleo Monago, behavioral health expert, Monique Presley, principal of the Presley Law Firm, and Ray Baker of Ray Baker Media. Folks, it's very interesting. I will hear critics who will say, you guys keep highlighting these stories as opposed to, you know, there are so many great cops out here. Again, what we are seeing repeatedly is that you have police officers who have a Wild West mentality. And I still believe as long as you have cops who are not disciplined, who are not indicted, who don't go to prison, there's this belief they can do whatever they want to without any repercussions. And we're gonna see more and more videos that I've been promising. We're gonna see more and more because it happens a lot. And now with cameras, we get to see it.
Well, I just wanna reiterate, I've said so much about this, I don't know what else to say, except for that we don't see every time this happens. We only see it when there is a camera. As someone who's working law enforcement, trust me, most of them do not make the camera or the news or a smartphone, and it's worse than we believe. So I agree with you that there should be something done that where there's swift justice when someone is killed like this. But how many times do you want to hear me say that?
We're seeing less and less provocation, and people are ending up dead. So it used to be the case where things like this would happen. They would at least be able to say that the person was armed or that they suspected that the person was armed or that there was a real struggle before use of deadly force was necessary. But now we're finding, as you say, through poor police tactics, but also through just this kind of increased anxiety level from police officers, that the minute they're in an altercation, they're using the maximum amount of force.
Joe Serpico, yeah. Of course, the movie Serpico, he uncovered massive corruption in the New York Police Department. He wrote after the Eric Garner case, I believe it was for the New York Daily News, he wrote a pending guest column. And to your point, he said, we used to have to carry a separate gun, and we would throw the gun down or throw a knife down. He said, hell, we don't need that now. He said, all a police officer has to do is say, my life was in danger. And the way the law is written, we give so much leeway, Ray, to that police officer, where they pretty much can do whatever they want, and they know, I'm getting off.
Absolutely. And what we're finding is more examples of hypocrisy here in the United States. If we're going to use our criminal justice system as a place of deterrent from certain behavior for everyday citizens like the four of us here, but yet the rules are different for law enforcement officials, that's complete inconsistency. And it's probable cause for so many citizens rightly to be frustrated.
Well, one idea I just want to make sure we're clear on, because I think you mentioned something about an increase. It's not an increase. Like I've said many times on this,
it's an increase in us seeing the videos.
It's an increase in us seeing the videos. These attitudes and that have led to the knee-jerk reaction that has led to the maiming, killing of particularly young black men, has not increased or been worse. It's always been like this.
What I think we're seeing an increase in is the incidence of use of deadly force where they cannot substantiate that there was a weapon involved or where there was an altercation or where there really was an imminent fear.
I remember back when,
just in terms of the numbers of African Americans, at least that we can document through data, who were dying at the hands of police officers, that's the number that's in. I'm not saying that when we weren't taking good data that the number wasn't terrible.
For a long time,
as
we weren't taking any data at all. Do you remember Daryl Gates? Anybody remember Daryl Gates?
Mm-hmm.
He used to be the head of the police department in Los Angeles. And in the 60s and 70s, he was one of the people that became most known for the chokehold. They were choking and killing naked black men who didn't have no blatant weapon. Some people think the black penis is a weapon. That's another conversation. But they were being killed. It was happening over and over and over again. And my point again is that this is not an onslaught. This is not new. The excuses are not new. Matter of fact, Daryl Gates said the reason that so many black, this was a quote,
right.
Was a paraphrase. He said the reason that so many black men were dying because black people were not normal physically.
Right.
Biologically, we were made differently, which is why we tended to die from the chokehold. And he went to lunch. I mean, there were no repercussions.
Also, the weekend, the officer who choked to death Eric Garner, a story was done on him where he said that he can't wait to get back on the force. But this is also another example of why people are critical of the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
We all saw the video. The Staten Island DA did not indict this police officer, took it to the grand jury. And so here's this cop. He's waiting to get back on the job, and folks are asking DOJ, where are you? Does it actually take this long for the Department of Justice to bring civil rights charges against this police officer? What more needs to be done? And I understand from a community standpoint, there's a belief that, look, we need action.
But he shouldn't be expecting to get back on the job, and it doesn't take the DOJ. The DOJ can't take away his job. That's up to the local police department and the mayor's office, and he used a procedure that he was not supposed to use. Even if they couldn't get him criminally indicted or to go to jail, he still should have already lost his job. The city is going to end up paying handsomely for his actions.
The man has a history. This wasn't his first incident.
But the whole point I'm making about DOJ is that DOJ, they're investigating. Folks are saying, okay, how long is this going to take? Is it going to take 2-3 years for Department of Justice to make a decision whether or not they should file civil rights charges against this guy? And I think it's a legitimate question. How long should it take? I mean, my goodness.
And it's not likely to happen. That's the reality.
All right, hold tight 1 second, folks. We come back. President Barack Obama will speak to the NAACP on tomorrow. His focus will be on criminal justice reform, the second time he has spoken to them during his presidency. We'll talk about his particular speech, what he should say. Also, the Serena Slam, she's done it again, taking home the trophy at Wimbledon. But Serena is still being attacked over her body. Folks saying she looks like a man. Also, she's not getting paid the same amount of money and endorsements as women who she has beat. But they happen not to be black. Plus, jazz great Najee explains why he fell in love with the saxophone. It is 9 after the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. with Roland Martin.
By the grace of God, I am what I am. And I offer no apologies tonight for my race or for my color. It's been a long evening, but I promise you that there is a message that I want you to hear this evening. First, I want to acknowledge the other half.
All right, folks, that's Roz Rock. She is the chairwoman of the NAACP. Sorry for the technical issue there. She delivered her opening speech last night to their annual convention in Philadelphia. We're going to have more of her speech this week. The NAACP, they're meeting all this week. It started on Friday. AXO competition took place this weekend, also later in the week. We're going to share some of the winners of the NAACP AXO competition. But tomorrow, President Barack Obama will deliver the keynote speech at the convention. This will be the second time he has spoken to the NAACP during his presidency. The last time was in 2009 when they celebrated their 100th anniversary. Now, President Obama plans to focus on criminal justice reform in his speech, which has been a major issue during his presidency, but not necessarily from him. I'm going to go to our panel here. Folks, it has been Eric Holder, the former Attorney General, who really has been the person leading the way on criminal justice reform. And I had said about a month ago, several weeks ago, that I felt and the president needed to give this speech. And I said it should have been to the National Bar Association, a group of black lawyers, but shortly after the White House announced that he would be speaking to the NAACP. The president has pretty much left this up to Eric Holder. But this was one where I felt the president needs to stand up on and be public on, and because there's a moment here, there's a moment where Congress literally could pass criminal justice reform in a bipartisan way. And I felt with him elevating this issue, it goes beyond just some of the smaller conversations, but making it clear to America this is a national priority. What should he say tomorrow?
I think he should finally connect the issue of racism and racist thinking to the criminal justice system, and that needs to be addressed and resolved, and that is important that these systems look at its problem, its history of imbalance and over-incarceration and criminalization of black people, and that would be nice if he actually addressed that in direct ways, like to some extent Holder did, but I'm not holding my breath.
I mean, we need the nuts and bolts of what has to actually be done. I agree with the things that Cleo's saying, but I want him to address head on the need for body cameras everywhere in the nation and the fact that even if it doesn't prevent certain criminal activity by police officers, it's still a necessary step, that the racial profiling recommendations that his commissions come up with, that those are ones that Congress needs to act on. Just all of the things that we've been waiting to see done. I'd like to see more training for police officers, that race sensitivity training be required, enhanced training, more difficult positions for them to actually get on the force. So there's much that he should say, and I think that he should put some meat in the message and talk about those things and push the reforms.
Ray, I made it clear that I wanted him, when he gave his State of the Union address, he said, you pass immigration reform, I'll sign it. And I wanted him to say that about criminal justice reform. And I wanted him to say, if there are Republicans in this room right now who are right on this issue, Senator Rand Paul, he should say Governor John Kasich of Ohio and some others as well, because there are Republicans. We're seeing Newt Gingrich, Grover Norquist, anti-tax, even the Koch brothers, where they've come down on the issue of criminal justice reform. We know who disproportionately this affects. Again, this is where this president can be, as Cleo said, very clear and get to the issue of race and make it clear. This is an American problem. This is an American problem, not a black American problem. This is an American problem.
Well, it is a black American problem, and quite ostensibly, right? But it's what Reverend Joseph Lowry always says, where if America has a cold, black America has pneumonia. And so what we see that we should hear from the president in tomorrow is all the pieces of criminal justice that we are alluding to that everyone said so far. But he can make an easy bipartisan pitch to speak to the interests of those there. Just like Republicans who are in support of this, you could talk about how it will save states repeatedly tons and tons of money if we can transition folks who are nonviolent drug offenders out of the criminal justice system. So if you want to speak to those those who are interested in conservative economic values, you can speak to their attention. If you want to speak to those who are more interested into the more progressive policy of our over-policing, the systematic and racist way that the criminal justice system approaches African Americans, then you can speak to that piece. So there's enough space in this one issue to galvanize and bring together so many different people.
Alabama, their prisons are built to hold 14,000 people. They hold 28,000 people. You look at Louisiana, the number of people they're sitting on death row. I would also hope the president, when he goes before, will make perfectly clear in Chicago, the people where they had confessions beat out of them by John Burge, folks who went to jail and they were unjustly accused. Look at what Craig Watkins did in Texas, creating a unit where more than 30 people were freed from death row or from life in prison because when they retested DNA, they realized they didn't commit those crimes. I think it has to be clear. It has to be bold. It can't be on one hand, on the other hand. I expect this to be one of the strongest speeches he gives because this is the moment to change it. We've seen the reports that he may very well this week commute the sentences of more folks when it comes to drug offenses. The president has the power with pardons, with commutations, to fix wrongs. And I believe he has to get even more aggressive in doing so.
Well, the president always, at least in the past, recent past, talked about the importance of working across political lines and working in a bipartisan manner. So given everything that you guys mentioned, these are all no-brainers. So hopefully he's listening to this show and other people with similar perspectives and will make a move regarding transformation of the criminal justice system, looking at policy and looking at things differently. But there's been some apprehension. I mean, as we already know, when we first heard about the massacre and assassination in Charleston, his first response was that it was a gun control issue, as opposed to it being a racist situation that was the result of a racist attack on black people. So he has some apprehension to go there. But he's talking to the NAACP. Is it NAA? Two A's? NAACP.
Two A's, Cleo.
Two A's. Thank you. I forgot because the colored part always throws me off. But anyway, because I'm trying to be black. But anyway, I'm sorry. Anyway, my point is that it's a prime audience and a prime time in his presidency to be a little blacker on some issues based on it being a no-brainer and it being a logical move. But we'll see what
I think the biggest
happens.
Piece, Roland, is also the president is very famous for on the one hand, on the other hand. And this mm-hmm. would be a very appropriate time to be unequivocal about that. And there's nothing wrong with seeing both sides of perspective. But we do need some decisive language and decisive policy that supports that language.
All right, folks, hold tight 1 second. We come back. Serena Williams, the most dominant athlete of her generation. I did not say dominant female athlete. The most dominant athlete. She just won Wimbledon. But the question is, why is she underpaid when it comes to marketing and endorsement deals? Also, why is America still so racist when it comes to her looks? We'll talk with tennis pro Zena Garrison, ESPN's Howard Bryant, and also former Bush speechwriter David Frum, who tweeted some controversial things about her, insinuating she was on steroids. Well, I challenged him on Twitter. He accepted my challenge. He'll be right here. We'll be back in 4 minutes. Also, Najee, we'll talk about his new CD as well. All of that more coming up on News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
A stunning performance by Serena Williams at Wimbledon on Saturday. She, of course, considered by many to be one of the greatest athletes of all time, not just female tennis player, but greatest athlete, period. Winning her 21st major title puts her one behind Steffi Graf for the record all time in the Open era. Margaret Court is the biggest winner at 24 of all time. Yet, despite winning, it's very interesting when you begin to talk about Serena Williams in terms of where she stands in the sport. The Daily Beast had a piece over the weekend where they talked about Serena Williams and the fact that she makes less money, half as much money, than the woman she consistently beats over time. You would think if you are the best in your field that the marketing dollars will flow. So the real question is, why is that? Is it a question of the standard of beauty in the world? That is that of a blonde, blue-eyed white woman. Think about, of course, Anna Kournikova, a woman who never won a single tennis title in her entire career, yet she made more money off the court than any other woman who played tennis. This issue also came up when the New York Times did a piece talking about the issue of body image in sports. And they said, quote, that in spite of Williams' success, body image issues among female tennis players persist, forcing many players to avoid bulking up. So the real question, why is that even a concern? At the end of the day, winning is winning. Joining us via FaceTime is ESPN writer, tennis expert Howard Bryant. On Skype, former professional tennis player Zena Garrison. Also in studio is David Frum from The Atlantic, who tweeted something about Serena and steroids. They got lots of folks talking, caught my attention as well. We'll get to that in just a minute. Zena Garrison, I want to go to you first. We look at Serena and how dominant she is, but it's interesting that she still is facing these attacks when it comes to her looks. She's not getting the marketing dollars as well. You can't convince me that if this was basketball, if this was football, if this was baseball, that she would not be the dominant player and the dominant one making money. What is at play here in tennis?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think Serena has done an excellent job of just kind of combating all of that has been said about her. She's defying the odds. I mean, tennis has always been what is considered to be the most beautiful, you know, long, lanky, blonde, blue-eyed sport. They've all consistently have always made more money. But what Serena's doing right now is she's getting ready to put herself in history even more if she wins the U.S. Open. That you're not going to be able to defy those odds anymore. And I think she's done an excellent job of just, you know, anytime they come at her with her built or the way she's going, she just seems to get stronger on the court.
Howard Bryant?
Yes, sir.
What do you make of all of this? And again, you talked about the tennis being a power game, how she's dominating. All of a sudden, why is how she looks even an issue?
Well, first of all, I can't hear what Zena is saying. I can't hear what anyone else is saying. But
okay.
I didn't know if I'm supposed to or not. But I think that one of the biggest issues, that there's so many different layers here, Roland, and I think the biggest one for me is if you're talking about pure competition, then you're doing yourself a disservice. You're not trying to win if you're not going to play the way the game is being played. If you look at Agnieszka Radwanska, her coach talked about how much they wanted her to keep her a woman, so she wasn't going to bulk up. And if you look at Radwanska's career, one of the reasons why she can't beat the bigger players is because she runs out of energy when the season's over. She's not in as physical shape as she needs to be. She doesn't hit the ball with enough power. So you'd have to conclude that if that is a conscious choice, then they are consciously not trying to win.
It is an issue, though, when people talk about the attacks on Serena's look. J.K. Rowling tweeted this, and this happened over the weekend. There were all these people who were saying that, well, you know, she looks like a man. Well, that was this guy who apparently tweeted she is built like a man. J.K. Rowling, of course, the author of the Harry Potter book, she tweeted back, yeah, my husband looks just like this in a dress. You're an idiot. She's gotten lots of attacks. There was this one tweet here online, this person tweeted, Serena the gorilla won again, grunts like one, looks like, is one. You go to some of these websites, and you go to these message boards, you see these kinds of attacks. Remember, you saw these kind of attacks on First Lady Michelle Obama as well. People saying those different things along those lines. But also, the New York Times piece got other folks talking as well. And in fact, David Frum with The Atlantic, David tweeted this, and I saw it, and I was trying to understand exactly what was the point. David said, quote, steroids? Oh, no, no, no. Body image issues. David, I tweet you, what did you mean by that?
Well, the New York Times ran a big story on Saturday morning before the game that had a lot of very strange comments about body image issues.
Okay.
And how Serena Williams has bulked up. Other tennis players, female tennis players, have made the choice that they felt they had the ability to bulk up, but they made the choice not to. I'm not a huge sports fan, but I am a big consumer of news media. I write for media through my career. And I said, what is this reporter trying to tell me? That seemed to me to be the obvious implication of what the reporter was trying to say. Tennis, as you know, has had large suspicions about being very lax on the subject of doping, both for male and for female athletes. And when a reporter writes this long story saying, this athlete got bulky, other athletes are not bulky, and other athletes have real questions about how that athlete got bulky, I thought, you know what, I'm going to decode this story for the people who are interested in following me.
So you were questioning the reporter and not Serena?
I was interpreting what I thought the reporter to be saying.
Because the other tweet you said, not to allege against Serena, again, I don't know, but she's not above the question.
Okay, so what happened, I tweeted two tweets on my public timeline, this one, and then it was then followed by a quote from the story. And the quote from the story said, something to the effect, I won't be able to quote it verbatim, but other athletes have said that they had the opportunity to bulk up and they chose not to. Then later on, during the day, I was taking that became controversial on Twitter. Someone who's a Twitter follower of mine who knows Serena a little bit sent me a very angry personal direct message, and we had about a 25 round exchange.
Okay.
Just through my own incompetence, three of the tweets from that exchange then got posted to my public timeline. As you can see, they're obviously in the form of a dialogue.
So you were not insinuating that Serena Williams uses steroids?
I have no idea whether Serena Williams uses steroids or not, obviously.
But there's absolutely no evidence. There's been no stories. There's been nothing linking her to that.
That's not quite true.
I said, that's actually not true at all.
Hold on one second. David, go ahead. I'm going to go to Howard. Now, I heard Zena want to jump in.
Okay. Yes. Look, there is, first, a lot of talk about steroids in tennis. Tennis is regarded as a sport that is not taken this as seriously. There have been a lot of talk about other athletes. So Rafael Nadal, is he taking steroids? Those have been questioned. In Serena Williams' case, there's been a lot of controversy because of the famous incident in her panic room in 2011 when a drug tester came out of competition, which happens pretty rarely in tennis. She took no drug tests out of competition, drug tests at all in 2010, okay. 2011. And she went into a panic room and said that she believed that she was being attacked by an intruder. But defeated, as a consequence, and I don't know what's in her head, obviously, but defeated an out of competition blood test at a time during a 2-year interval when she took none.
Howard, then Zena, then I'm going to go to a break and we'll come back with our panel here.
Well, I was going to say that the first thing is that I took issue with what David was saying because I didn't think that steroids was the issue of that story at all. I didn't feel that was necessary, a necessary decoding. I thought that the story was really about whether or not a female athlete's body was a choice in the first place. I felt like when you look at the quotes from Maria Sharapova and from Radvanska's coach and from a lot of the players who were in the story, it was really about making the choice between athleticism and speed against power. And I didn't look at that as a Serena's choice to bulk up story. And I think the biggest issue that I took with the story, and I know Ben Rothenberg quite well, I felt like the issue that he had to deal with in that story was even thinking that your body choice is a type in the first place, which it is not.
Zena Garrison.
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, I mean, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I have been, first of all, the Women's Tennis Association has one of the strongest, and if not the strongest, next to the Olympics as far as drug testing are concerned. I do know that she gets tested regularly. And then the other part, the biggest part is Serena has been muscular for quite some time, yes. For as long as I've known her. I've known her since she was 7 years old. By the time she hit, 15, so, I mean, she's had problems with her weight going up and down. She is fit. And every time when someone gets an opportunity to do what she's doing, even Martina Navratilova had the same similar question come up all the time. I would like for Americans to stop, to just enjoy what's happening as far as history is concerned and stop worrying about whether someone's cheating. Because when we get in a situation where people we do know that are cheating, we sometimes choose not to address them. Why does Serena have to be any different?
Hold tight one second. We go up, come back. I want to deal again with this issue in terms of black women. The attacks on her looks. This goes beyond Serena Williams. We've seen it with First Lady Michelle Obama, other black women as well. And that deals with the issue of what is the standard of beauty in this world. And in many cases, it does not look like a black woman, even though 2/3 of the world are people of color. We'll be back on News One Now and TV One in just a moment talking to Serena Williams.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Welcome back to News One Now. We're talking about Serena Williams, one of the greatest athletes of our time. We're chatting with Zena Garrison, retired tennis great, also ESPN writer, tennis expert Howard Bryant. Also joining us in the studio, David Frum from The Atlantic, and of course our panel, Cleo Monago, Monique Presley, and Dr. Cleo Monago, Ray Baker. The reason I think this body image story is critically important, the tweet of J.K. Rowling, the comments that people are making, a lot of the hateful comments, is because Venus Williams and Serena Williams have had to deal with this from day one. There are numerous fit athletes in tennis, but the distinction between them, they're black women. Zena Garrison, you know this well. There were critics of you in terms of how you look. Shonda Rubin has faced that as well. And a lot of this is because in this country, whether we want to be honest with ourselves or not, the image of beauty in America has been that of a blonde, blue-eyed white woman. And when you have these women, phenomenal athletes, all of a sudden the images of monkeys and chimpanzees and apes and all these crazy things come up, and that comes to how we look at beauty in America.
Yeah, it's actually unbelievably ridiculous, but it is something you have to deal with. As you're training or coming up to be a professional tennis player, it's one that, you know, we're taught at a very young age that these are things that you have to deal with. I remember never having a nice looking picture of myself when I was playing, but then you would see someone like Chrissy, who always had a great picture. Martina's picture sometimes came out very strong looking. And it's, you know, and this actually goes back to the point where you talk about dealing with the endorsements. And then I would always have people come up to me and say, oh my goodness, you don't look anything like you do on the courts. Well, those pictures were chosen. I am who I am. I was very blessed that God gave me the body. And let's be real about this. I mean, back in the very old days when we came over here from Africa, I mean, the women were considered very strongly built. It's just in our genes. We don't have to lift weights a lot to pump up. Sometimes we have a tendency to not pump up as much as people think you do because our muscles are automatically, you know, they develop very quickly.
Monique, and Cleo, we hear this stuff when it comes to First Lady Michelle Obama, and I mean, I've heard folks say stuff, and you're going, really? Really?
Well, my concern, as usual, is the impact all this stuff has on us, and in this instance, black women, because I expect white racism to occur. That's a redundant part of my life and all of our lives in this country. I was just concerned, and am concerned about the impact on Serena and Zena, because Serena is one of the Michael Jackson bad, good baddest tennis players ever walked the planet, and she should be able to just enjoy that, you know, and being in the sun with her genius. But she has to deal with being dehumanized because of racism, and I'm just concerned that a lot of black women are tortured by this because we don't tell our children that they live in a racist society and prepare them for this so they can deflect this crap and go on to love themselves.
Monique?
Look, Still I Rise was not written because of all of the easy times that we've gone through, because life is some sort of crystal stair. It's not just hard for Venus and Serena. Black women have been dealing with this for hundreds of years, but what I see in this story and what I hear from some of the comments is racism and sexism. I feel sorry for the Caucasian woman in the New York Times story who could be a really great tennis player, but she'd rather look like a woman and has a coach who thinks that a woman means that you can't have the muscles that it takes to play professional sports and actually win. That means that she's been marginalized in a craft where she could actually
she
be good.
She can still get paid.
Yes.
A quick right. Will she get paid less? The moment she keep kicking her behind, Sharapova.
I'm glad Monique spoke before I did, because I think that this is the whole aesthetic of the conversation we're having is sexist, right? And it's a confluence of racism and sexism. And what we're seeing, particularly when we mention this, is men policing the bodies of women and this idea of what a woman has to look like. Hey, I want to do this, but I still want to be a woman. Does it? I'm not equipped to now have this conversation, so I defer to Monique.
But yes.
I want to go policing a woman's body.
I want to go, David.
Anybody actually have the chance to see Serena in her championship ball dress? I think she looks pretty much like a woman.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Always gorgeous.
Right. Hold tight. Hold on 1 second. This is the photo of her in the ball gown. That looked like a woman to me right there. That's a grown woman.
She looks like a woman when she's on the court.
No.
Looks like a woman the whole time.
I want to go David on this one here, David, because David, his was interesting. Again, I'm talking about this notion of standard of beauty. Put up the photo of Serena at the U.S. Open about a decade ago. Okay, now here's what's interesting, David. Anybody who, first of all, I was running BlackAmericaWeb.com when we put those photos up. It shut the website down. No. You know what I'm saying? I was running the site. I couldn't log on for 4 hours because of the photo. But what's amazing, David, is that in America, Kim Kardashian celebrated Serena's butt is real. Kim is fake. Okay, all of Serena's real. She's fake. But for some reason, in America, that's not considered the standard of beauty. But if that was a white woman with a body like that, oh my gosh, she'd be celebrating.
Look, one of the things that I think happens in this conversation, when you're talking about athletes who are people who receive enormous adulation and huge wealth in our society, that because they become repositories for they become screens on which people project so many beliefs and hopes and hurts and history, that it makes it hard to answer a simple question like, you know, this person, this athlete who is this great competitor in this global event, what are they doing? Are they playing fair or not? And that becomes what has happened is this is seen through a screen of so much historical trauma that you lose sight of the actual person.
What do you mean by historical trauma? What historical trauma?
Well, because you referenced a couple of times the First Lady, and she has been the recipient of a lot of abusive comments. I mean, I worked in a White House.
Similar comments made by Serena Williams.
Right. Well, yes and no. But look, I've worked in the White House, I think, and I've written often. I think that she's been one of the most successful first ladies. It's a very difficult job, and she understands how to do it. But because if you make everything like everything else, and this is I'm here to talk about what I wrote. We say, you know, when you're trying to understand, is the sport of tennis on the level? Are there problems in tennis? And to then say we're going to move this conversation to one about how. Millions of women are seen, that you lose sight of the person who's at the center of the story.
No.
Actually, the center of the story is, if you're talking about the sport being on the level, then I think that it's a very different conversation because, one, that's not what that New York Times story was about. That's what you want to talk about, which is fine, which is completely appropriate if that's what you want to do. However, I don't hear a lot of people talking about Ronda Rousey being on steroids and she's an MMA fighter. What about Samantha Stosur, who is as big as Serena, or someone like Angelique Kerber, who's also a really, really well put together player. I hear this about Serena Williams. Maybe it's because she wins all the time, but I think that Roland's actually talking about something else, which is standard of beauty. It's not simply the PED conversation. It's also calling somebody an ape. And when you're at Wimbledon, I saw Serena beat Radvanska in the 2012 final. I was at the Heather Watson match. I was at the Azarenka match just a few days ago. And when you're at those matches, you feel the difference. You feel from the predominantly white crowd, and Zina knows this because she's been on the stage, when a black woman hits a tennis ball, you can see the reaction, which is very, very different from the way a white woman hits the ball with the same amount of power and the same grunting and the same ferocity. But it's almost as though, I remember 2012 specifically, it was almost as though there was a pity in the crowd that these poor young girls had no chance against this beast. And that was you could feel it, it was palpable. And what was really interesting about it is that Serena doesn't even hit the ball the hardest. It's simply the reaction. It's the visceral of it.
I got to go to a break, and we're going to come back. We'll finish our conversation. I got to squeeze in two more breaks, but we'll do so. News One Now TV.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Welcome back to News One Now, TV One. David Frum, you want to make a comment after Howard made his point. And I get when you said why you tweeted what you did and what you were trying to decode. The issue for me is that in the moment of this greatness, introducing something else that had nothing to do with it, that's why I say, okay, I need to understand what you're talking about. And I am expanding this because I'm looking at literally the hate that she is getting because of how she looks, and she's an absolutely gorgeous, fine woman.
Yes. Well, Howard said something that was really interesting, really made me think. You know, it's true. As a society, we're not very serious about steroids. We're serious about if you're caught, then the house falls on you. But we don't really want to know. And that is true across a wide range of sports, and it's true for men and women. And we expect athletes to do things that the human body can't on its own, no matter how highly trained, do. Take injuries in a way that the human body can't do. And we play sports that expose people to injuries that the human body can't take, except for a short. Steroids are important, and you know there have been periodic attempts to rouse the nation's consciousness about them, and the world's. But mostly, we look the other way.
Well, I would think, Zena, that the reporter wanted to focus on steroids, they would have. I don't get the sense that's what the story was about.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, I think I'm the only professional tennis player that played on this.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
But I just think
my 3-5 doesn't count.
You guys have no idea how hard it is to do what she's doing right now mentally.
Yes.
Forget about the physical, mentally. I mean, this girl played the Australian Open. I was actually there. I knew she was a little sick. She won the U.S. Open. And then we watched the French Open. Everyone in the world could see that she was sick. Mentally, still pulled it out. She's down against Heather Watson. Looks like she's not going to come back in the Wimbledon. Comes back, wins that match, and then wins Wimbledon. Now she has a chance to win a Grand Slam. Who's Steffi Graf, who we have not talked about on this conversation, that I played with. What even then people were saying she was possibly on steroids. So every time a top tennis player is at the max of doing something they're supposed to, that has a chance to do or break history, they have to be cheating. Like, we got to get away from that and realize what's going on. We have the opportunity for kids to actually see history, these young kids being made if she wins the championship in New York. But instead, we're on this conversation and talking about the way she looks and possible steroids.
Zena, what angers me, though, is the fact that with all of the greatness you just talked about, that a woman who she's beaten 17 out of the last 21 times makes twice as much money as she does when it comes to endorsements, when in any other sport, Michael Jordan made more money than any other basketball player because he was the best. All right? LeBron right now is number one. Same thing if you're in baseball, same thing if you're in football, but somehow in tennis, oh no, well, she don't really fit the standard of beauty, and that's crazy. There's no reason in the world, and there's something else at play when Madison Avenue says, Serena, I know you're the best, but we gonna pay this woman over here because her look is different. That is about looks. That is not about skill set.
And let's not forget, Serena speaks a couple of different languages. She's very diverse, you know, from any way you look at it. She has a ton of businesses. Serena is worried about history, not the fact of the way that people think that she looked. I think let's go back to what happened in Indian Wells. She went back after years in calling the, we're not going to say the word, but I've been there. I understand it. For her to forgive, that's why I believe she's at the moment that she's at right now, because she's been able to forgive all the negative criticism that people put on her to do something that I feel that God has given her the opportunity to be the best female athlete we've ever seen in this day and time.
Folks, I'm absolutely out of time. David Frum, Zena Garrison, Howard Bryant, Cleo Monago, Monique Presley, Ray Baker, so appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Back on News One Now on TV One in the moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, real simple. Serena Williams is simply the best. She also should be paid that way as well. And the fact of the matter is, in America, Madison Avenue advertisers, they simply have a decision in terms of their eyes, what they consider to be beautiful. And Serena Williams is not that. But the fact of the matter is, she is. And I will take her over any of these other women any day of the week. Okay. So Dan, what Madison Avenue thinks. Sisters, you got the looks and you are beautiful. I'm out.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.